I want to begin with two truths this evening. The first one is this, that problems are a part of life. That's the unfortunate but real truth. I think of John 16:33. These things I have spoken to you, that in me you may have peace. In the world you will have tribulation. But the good news is, but be of good cheer, I have overcome the world. So problems, as Jesus said, are a part of this life. But the second truth is this, we can make our problems worse. We can make our problems worse, depending upon how we handle our problems. And one of the worst ways to handle our problems and makes them worse is resentment. I've thought a lot about resentment as we are studying this past week about forgiveness. And that topic of forgiveness would include how to remove resentment. Resentment, by definition, is a feeling of indignant displeasure or persistent ill will at something regarded as a wrong, an insult, or an injury. Resentment, simply put, is holding on to a hurt. Holding on to a hurt. It's letting a hurt turn into hate. As we study this topic tonight, I want to go back to the book of Job and the example of Job. If anyone had an excuse to be bitter and resentful, wouldn't it be Job? One of the wealthiest men of his day, very prominent, very wealthy, very powerful, and a godly man. And yet in one day, all that changes. He loses everything. In fact, I'm considering studying the book of Job with you a little bit more in detail because it raises some very interesting questions and challenging questions at that. And it is challenging to see how this man of God who is yes, he's been blessed by God. In fact, Satan says it's no wonder he stays faithful to you because you've built a hedge about him. God permits Satan to remove that hedge, and he loses all of his wealth. He even loses his children. He loses his health. In fact, in Job chapter 2, it's always struck me how Job's wife says to him, "Do you still hold fast to your integrity? Curse God and die." But as I've thought about what she said through the years, I'm thinking she may have been merciful. Perhaps she was thinking, why don't you just get it over with? Why don't you just curse God and allow him just to take your life and put an end to your misery? But Job didn't do that. And he has a few friends who come to him, as you will recall, who sat with him 7 days, didn't say a word. But when they did begin to speak, they began to wonder, Job, what have you done? What have you done so terrible for God to punish you like this? We know, we see the big picture. We know that it's not because of Job's faith and his faithfulness that he's suffering. But he has to work through that. And he has these friends telling him, this is why you're suffering. You've sinned such a great sin. It's all your fault, Job. And again, wouldn't this be a classic opportunity for Job to be filled with bitterness and resentment? As we look at Job's life and some of the statements from the book of Job, I want us to see the causes, consequences, and cures for this deadly poison of resentment. First of all, some causes. One cause is what people say about us can cause resentment or cause us to respond with resentment and bitterness. Job 19, verse 2. How long will you torment my soul and break me in pieces with words? He asks his so-called friends. How long are you going to torment me and crush me with your words? Even though many of us learn early on in our lives this statement: sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. I believe I was probably taught that phrase to try to minimize the damage that words can do, because the truth is, words do hurt. They can hurt a lot. And response to that can be bitterness and resentment. Proverbs 12:18 says, "Reckless words pierce like a sword, but the tongue of the wise brings healing." The truth is, what people say can cause us to hurt and to be filled with resentment. Number two, what people think about us can cause us to hold resentment or bitterness. People can hurt us a lot without saying a word. There's a lot of nonverbal messages, body language, facial expressions. The trouble with this is sometimes we can even misinterpret that. But sometimes with just a look or again, the body language, messages can be communicated. Sometimes those messages hurt. Job 19, again, verse 5 this time. Job complains, "You exalt yourselves above me and use my humiliation against me." One paraphrase states it like this: "You boast of your goodness, claiming I'm suffering because I'm guilty." Or, "You think you're better than I am and regard my troubles as proof of my guilt." But there's that idea. You think you're better than I am. You're accusing me of having done something horrible for God to be punishing me like this. So what they thought about Job hurt him, and he could have easily been filled with resentment. So what people say, what people think, what people do to us can hurt. Job 19:19, "All my close friends abhor me, they hate me, and those whom I love have turned against me." One of the things that makes resentment so painful is that the people that we're resentful against or bitter against are often the people that we love. It's the one that are closest to us. We rarely resent strangers, but it's those that are close to us that have said or done or thought something that may be hurtful. And the worst kind of hurt is disloyalty or betrayal. I'm sure Job felt betrayed by his friends, especially in the explanation they are offering as for his suffering. But notice this definition again: resentment, a feeling of indignant displeasure or persistent ill will at something regarded as a wrong, insult, or injury. It can be simply our interpretation of something said or done. But what I want to underscore here is that resentment is a response. It's a response. To something that people have said, thought, or done. It can be a response to some circumstance in which we find ourselves. A circumstance that is not pleasurable. A circumstance that is very difficult. A circumstance or circumstances like that of Job. Again, he could have been easily filled with resentment against God. But notice, secondly, some consequences of resentment. Number one, it's unreasonable. It's unreasonable. It doesn't make sense. Job 5, verse 2 is a great text about resentment. Resentment kills a fool, and envy slays the simple. That's spoken by Eliphaz, but I believe it's still very, very true. Resentment kills a fool. One paraphrase says it like this: "To worry yourself to death with resentment would be a foolish, senseless thing to do." Why is it foolish? Because it's a waste of time and energy. Resentment doesn't work. It won't change the past. It'll never correct the problem. It'll never restore a relationship. It only makes matters worse. Which brings us to number two. Resentment is unhelpful. It doesn't help at all. Bildad's words, Job 18, verse 4. "You who tear yourself to pieces in your anger." And he's speaking to Job. "You who tear yourself to pieces in anger Is the earth to be abandoned for your sakes? Or should the earth be vacant just for you? Should it clear out just for you? Or must the rocks be moved from their place? In other words, to accommodate you? But notice Bildad says that Job, with his anger, was tearing himself to pieces. It does teach us this lesson that resentment always hurts us more than it does the person with whom we're upset. It always hurts us. Some of you may remember Amos and Andy. I've only heard of them. But I did read this about these comics, Amos and Andy. One time Amos had a guy who was always hitting him on the chest, and he was tired of it. And he was complaining to Andy one day. And Amos said, "Well, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to stop that guy from hitting me on the chest. I'm going to strap some dynamite onto my chest. And the next time he slaps me, he's going to get his hand blown off." Well, obviously he didn't think that one through, did he? But to me it illustrates what resentment can do. We think we're hurting the other, but we're really just hurting ourselves. Perhaps you remember this statement. This one is attributed to Malachi McCourt. Resentment is like taking poison and waiting for the other person to die. You're only hurting yourself with anger and bitterness. It's not worth the cost. The price is too high. It prolongs the hurt. It makes us miserable. It's unreasonable. It's unhelpful. It's unhealthy. Job 21. Job has this insight. One man dies in full vigor, completely secure and at ease. His body well nourished, his bones rich with marrow. Another man dies in bitterness of soul, never having enjoyed anything good. Side by side, they lie in the dust, and worms cover them both. I think Job's primary point here is that death comes to all. Some may be healthy just before they die. Some die in bitterness of soul. But the point I want to highlight is, which way would you rather die? Bitterness of soul just makes it worse. In fact, bitterness can hasten death. Doctors have discovered that there's a strong relationship between one's emotional and physical health. They've also discovered that resentment is the single most unhealthy emotion you can have. It can cause fatigue, it'll drain your energy, it may cause backaches, stomach aches, headaches. You say that guy's a pain in the neck, there may be more truth to that than we realize. But it's unhealthy. Again, resentment kills a fool. I like what one person wrote. If you want to be healthy, it's not just what you eat. It's what's eating you. Resentment can eat us up. It's a cancer of the soul. It creates a prison emotionally, mentally, and spiritually around our lives that lock us in our own misery. Ephesians 4, verse 31. I like to call these the prison bars. Get rid of all bitterness, rage, and anger, brawling and slander, along with every form of malice. Those are prison bars that imprison us in misery. Paul goes on to write and be kind, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, just as God in Christ also forgave you. That's what opens up those prison doors. It's what breaks those bars that we build around us and lock us into our own misery. And bitterness or resentment is one of those. So it does nothing good for us. So let's consider some cures for resentment. The first one is this, is to reveal your hurt. Be honest about it. Admit it. Talk to God about it. One thing that's, as you study the book of Job didn't remain silent. He wasn't passive. When his friends tell him or ask him, "What have you done for God to punish you?" He He avows his innocence. I've done nothing of this magnitude to incur this kind of punishment. Here's a couple of examples. Job 7, verse 11. Therefore, I will not keep silent. I will speak out in the anguish of my spirit. I will complain in the bitterness of my soul. And what we'll see in the book of Job is that so often he longs to have an audience with God. He wants to speak with God face to face, as it were, to ask him why, and why is all this happening? But God understood Job. God knew Job was hurting. Just like God understands us, he understands our hurt. And when it comes to when we're hurt, we have some choices to make. One is that we can repress it. We can rehearse it and repress that feeling, shove it down in our lives. One fellow said, "When I swallow my anger, my stomach keeps score." We can repress it. We can try to hold it in. If you swallow your anger, it's going to come out one way or another. It may come out in our health or something. So repressing it is not the healthy thing to do. We can express our hurt. Negatively, we can express it by saying, "Well, I'm going to get even. I'm going to get revenge. I'm going to retaliate." But there's so much in the Scriptures that tell us, Romans 12, for example, that's not the way to handle it. We can confess it. We can admit it. Admit it to God like Job did. A second thing is to release your offender. Release your offender. And this is where the idea of forgiveness comes into play. You'll never stop hurting until you learn to forgive. I've often been asked, I've often thought about this question. What if a person isn't penitent? What do you do? Let me share some insights from Gary Chapman that I found helpful. When someone has wronged you and refuses to apologize, the challenge is not to forgive the unapologizing offender, but to release him along with the hurt and the anger. He goes on to write, if the offender confesses his error and makes a positive change in his life, you can then forgive. If not, the consequences of his actions will find him in time without any help from you. Releasing a person is very different from forgiving. It doesn't lead to reconciliation, but it does free you emotionally and spiritually to become the person you were meant to be. Consider that. The idea of release your offender. It's really forgiving him in your heart, even before he repents and apologizes. Here's a nugget from the book of Job that you may or may not have missed. It's at the end of the book of Job. And consider the fact that Job's friends have been talking to him and accusing him. What horrible thing have you done? And he maintains his innocence. When he could have been resentful and bitter against them. But I want you to see when God chose to bless Job again. Job 42, verse 10. After Job had prayed for his friends, the Lord made him prosperous again and gave him twice as much as he had before. I've always zoomed in on the fact that in the end, God blessed Job again, twice as much as he had before. But did you catch that statement? When did Job's misery end? Was it when he got revenge on his friends? No. Was it when he got even with them? No. It's after he prayed for him, which would indicate he forgave him. He prayed for him. When you can pray for someone who's hurt you, then you know you've released them, you've forgiven them. Jesus taught, I tell you who hear me, love your enemies, Do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. And pray for those who mistreat you. Forgive them or release them, not because it's fair, but for your own benefit. As Paul said, do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. So release your offender. Thirdly, refocus your aim. Refocus your aim. After Job is reminded of the power of God and he's repentant and he basically says, God, I'm sorry, I didn't understand. And I now see, I'm now reminded of your power and your glory, and please forgive me for my questioning. And Job's part of his response is Job 42, 1 and 2. Job replied to the Lord, I know that you can do all things, and no plan of yours can be thwarted. So he humbles himself before God and acknowledges that God is God and he isn't. But his focus now is on continuing to serve God. That's his focus. You see, as long as you focus on the person who has hurt you, you're allowing him or her to control your life. As long as you focus on the person who has hurt you, you're allowing him or her to control your life. So how do you get rid of a hurt feeling? You say, well, I'm not going to resent anymore. No, you've got to replace it. You've got to change your focus. You focus now on what you do want, not on what you don't want. And what we see Job doing at the end, he turns his focus back on God, humbling himself before him and focusing on him. And yes, there's a happy ending. The Lord blessed the latter part of Job's life more than the first. And as far as resentment goes and how to remove resentment, if we'll do it, we'll be blessed because of it. The one lesson of Job's life is this. It doesn't matter who's hurt you or how long you've been hurt or how deeply you've been hurt. God can make the rest of your life the best of your life if we're only willing to forgive, to let go of the resentment, to release the offender, and to refocus our aim upon God. Buddy Hackett read a statement by this comedian. He said, I've had a few arguments with people, but I never carry a grudge. You know why? He says, while you're carrying a grudge, they're out dancing. They're out dancing. Another statement I read, no matter how long you nurse a grudge, it won't get better. No matter how long you nurse a grudge, it won't get better. Resentment kills a fool. Let's close again with Paul's words. Let all bitterness, resentment, anger, wrath, clamor, evil speaking be put away from you. Instead, be kind, tender-hearted, forgiving one another, just as God in Christ forgave you. It may be tonight that you desire the prayers of the church on your behalf. It may be that you've been studying and are ready to obey the gospel of Jesus Christ. If that be the case, if you're subject to the invitation of Jesus, won't you come right now as we stand and sing?